The Tom Woods Show, episode 1969.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, don't even think about missing the libertarian event of the year. The 2000th episode of The Tom Woods Show, live in Orlando, featuring many of your favorites from The Tom Woods Show. And Michael Malice says his special surprise guest, whose identity I myself don't even know, will bring the house down. Cost nothing to attend. Register at tomwoods2000.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode number 1969 of The Tom Woods Show. And joining me today is U.S. Congressman Thomas Massey of Kentucky. And boy, I wish we could just have a nice, pleasant, casual conversation. But after this catastrophic and horrible speech from Joe Biden the other day and his multi-point plan to stop the spread of COVID, well, we have to, you know, Congressman, it's like, I say this a lot, but it's like the kind of thing you say to people at a funeral. You say, I'm sorry we have to meet under these circumstances. Well, likewise, I'm sorry. This is what's bringing us together. But how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. We're 18 months, two presidents, $5 trillion, three jabs, and a shredded constitution into slowing the spread.
Yes, yes, indeed we are. So let's talk about, I don't want to go into all the points of the plan because I want to focus on the one that is of most concern to everybody, which is namely that if you're a business with 100 or more employees, then they all have to be vaccinated or dismissed. And I think this has a lot of people alarmed. It has a lot of vaccinated people alarmed because of the power grab that's involved and all that stuff. First of all, I want to know your thoughts about that. I think I know what they are, but I'd like you to get them on the record. And then secondly, I have been soliciting from people who listen to me ideas about what people can do, ways they might resist. Yeah. And you are a sitting U.S. congressman. And if you're going to actively recommend that people resist an order of the president, you know, if this be treason, the saying. So, you know, let's make the most of it here.
Well, gee, I got so many things to unpack from that. Look, before we talk about how to resist, let me give you my feelings on what he said. My feelings about this are the same as my feelings when Trump used the CDC to issue an eviction moratorium. There's no statutory authority for this. Let's say even if it were constitutional, to be legal, you would have to have a vote of Congress because we haven't given the statutory authority to any agency to do this kind of thing. And so when Trump said through the CDC that to prevent the spread of the disease, that the CDC could intervene in private contracts that are regulated by state law to effectively seize property without compensation, a violation of the Fifth Amendment. By the way, our founders, actually, this is a dirty little secret. They believed in eminent domain. But the difference between their deal and the king before them was that they would pay you if they took your stuff. So the CDC eviction moratorium, when Trump issued that, I came out that day in full force. I don't know if there was a single other Republican in the House or the Senate that did to say it was unconstitutional. It was one of the most blatantly, I might have called it socialist, but it's actually communist things that our government has ever done, which is to seize private property and reassign it to somebody. Okay, if something's unconstitutional or illegal, you cannot make it constitutional or illegal by inserting a regulatory agency and an employer in between the issuing authority and the victim. But that is what President Biden has done. He knows he can't force you, he can't tie you down and make you be vaccinated, but he's trying to insert OSHA, well, the Department of Labor and OSHA, and then your employer. He's basically got three levels in here, and then you, and he's saying because he's got three intermediaries that it's somehow legal or constitutional. No, that is not going to fly, and I suspect that this Supreme Court will overturn it. So that's my thought on the actual constitutionality They may not say it's unconstitutional, but I think they will say it's illegal because OSHA doesn't really have the statutory authority. Of course, they will go find some statute and try to hang their hat on the smallest of a hook that might be there. But I think the Supreme Court's going to say, no, that's illegal, and you would need Congress to make this legal. Now, I would differ with the Supreme Court and probably most of my colleagues and say by saying it's also unconstitutional. Yeah. But so that's my thought on that. And we can talk more about that or talk about how to evade this.
Well, it seems to me, if in case it hasn't become obvious to everybody, that a lot of folks, let's say on the other side of this debate, are not exactly brimming with constitutional principle, because it depends on who the president is and what the proposed law is. It's not a matter of, look, the president can never go beyond the powers that he legitimately has. They will not say that. It'll be, well, for example, if it were anything other than forcing a vaccine, if he wanted to force something else on people, if he wanted to say your employer is now going to police you to make sure you don't have an abortion and OSHA is going to oversee that, well, they'd all be up in arms about that. But it's the same principle. But instead now it's, but we like this thing. So it's okay for a dictator to dictate as long as he dictates things I like. Well, that sounds like a great principle.
It's going to come back and bite them in the rear end. I mean, why would they want anybody to have this much authority over their daily lives, not just while they're at work, but when they go home and after they've left the job, you know, long into the future? This isn't, OSHA isn't saying wear a mask while you're at work. By the way, the irony of this is OSHA is the one organization that knows that cloth masks don't work. And your employer would be sued out of existence if they told you to go into a coal mine with a cloth mask. And by the way, coal particles are much larger than virus particles, right? If they told you to go in there with a bandana or a t-shirt wrapped around your face, and you'll be all good.
Right.
Like OSHA is the one organization that knows that the masks are BS. So maybe that's why. I mean, I always thought that Biden might try to violate the Constitution and do a mask mandate, but I never thought he would just jump from A to C. I thought they would go through B. It's like Matt Kibbe said, we're not on a slippery slope. We've gone into the black hole.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And of course, what they would have wanted to do with the masks, and he did urge people to have 100 days with the masks, was when the numbers for the virus invariably come down, because the virus ignores the stuff that we're doing. It ignores the masks. It ignores the 6-foot stickers on the floor and all this other stuff. As it inevitably comes down, they'll let the masks take the credit.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons they want to do that. The thing is, I have never seen people who listen to me and who follow you be so concerned as they are right now. They feel like they're in a different America all of a sudden. And as I say, even people who have been vaccinated, a lot of them have enough principle to say, I can't know all the individual circumstances of every person. And not to mention, just let's just put it this simply, regardless of the merits of the vaccines, if somebody, for whatever reason, is truly terrified to have something injected into him, then it's just wrong on the face of it to force that person to take it. Well, you're terrified, but we're going to put that thing in there if you want to be able to make a living. So is there any possible recourse they have? I mean, your private employer, it's very hard, it seems to me, to sue in the courts. Whereas there has been some success in the universities. At George Mason University, there was a victory for a professor who had natural immunity, and because that's a government entity. But in the private sector, are we just reduced to civil disobedience?
By the way, the victory at the university was not in the courts per se. I think they just gave up. They didn't
want
to take it to the court.
That's right. That's right.
And they maintained it had nothing to do with his contention. I don't know. They just randomly decided that this one professor wouldn't apply to them, but it had nothing to do with his letter or his objection.
Funny how that happens.
Yeah, you know, and in the military, which I've focused on this because unlike what Biden just did yesterday, which is unconstitutional, the military probably can force you to take a vaccine. I mean, they do it. The precedent is there. There's 12 other, you know, more than a dozen other vaccines that they have to take. And so I've focused on that, but they have religious exemptions and medical exemptions, but nobody's been granted one out of the over a million people serving. And many have applied for exemptions to the mask mandate already. By the way, do not train members of the military on how to don a gas mask and then expect them to believe that a cloth mask is going to work. Like, I never served in the military, but I have family members who have, and they all went through the gas chamber in boot camp where they teach you how masks work. So don't be surprised if fighter pilots later tell you they're not wearing your damn mask because it's a freaking joke. You've trained them on how masks work. So don't be surprised when they say, I'm not wearing your mask, it's a joke. But anyways, none of them have been granted exemptions. It is my pinned tweet, and I'm waiting for Twitter to just cancel me. But the tweet I have pinned at the top, because I wanted to stake this territory out, and I've got 3 or 4 weeks of precedent, is that injecting a needle with chemicals in it into somebody against their will is violence. If you did this to me, Tom, it would be an assault, probably felony assault. Okay. If you came up to me on the street and poked me with a needle, by the way, not once, not twice, but three times, you now are going to be poking me with this needle and then injecting something, that is violence. Okay. Then if you coerce somebody by withholding basic human rights, if they don't take the needle, that is also violence. And anybody should be ashamed for promoting or promulgating that. So, and just, Tom, if you elect some people to do that to me, that's still violence. I don't care how many intermediaries you put in there or how many times the money or the authority changes hands, it's still violence. So that's why people are so upset. I'm upset. Just like I've thought about what can we do? What can I do? One of the things I thought about was organizing, you know, some protests. What if a U.S. congressman organizes this? Well, guess who's going to be in those protests? They're going to be under the veil of, well, these are domestic terrorists, so we have to infiltrate them and find out what they're thinking. There will be FBI agents in those protests. And, you know, I saw something early on, which I kind of agree with. This was before everybody was mandated, but somebody said we should mandate vaccines for FBI agents so they don't spread COVID at the militia meetings. But anyways, so I'm concerned, like, if I organize a protest, it'll be infiltrated. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm an observer of actual conspiracy.
Oh, that's totally legit. Of course that's going to happen. We all know that's going to happen.
Right. So what can you do? As a congressman, I wasn't always the congressman. A lot of people have my cell phone because, you know, believe it or not, I had friends before I got elected. And they're still my friends for some odd reason. And when Biden got on the horn and started talking about what he's going to do, it, my phone lit up and people were saying, what can I do? Mm. Particularly, I had a woman of childbearing age. She loves her job and she doesn't really think that her job isn't really like working for a corporation, but it's owned by a corporation. And she knows they have more than 100 employees. And she's like, I've already had COVID. By the way, that's the biggest conspiracy that's going on, the denial of natural immunity.
Yeah.
That is the one reason that you have to suspect, or it's getting harder to ascribe charitable interpretations to their motives.
Yeah.
Because they want everybody jabbed and they are willfully ignorant of the science. But people are calling me, say, what can I do? All right. And by the way, this woman, she's like, I've never sued anybody. I've never complained to my boss. I like my job. I don't want to quit. I don't even want to tell my boss anything negative. Like, this is most of America, by the way.
Yeah.
What can I do? And the first thought that came to mind, she travels a lot. She's on her own time. She works in health sciences. I said, ask for a 1099 instead of a W-2. Like, these are just practical. If you're asking for the most practical thing, what can I do? I work for a company that has more than 100 employees. How do I get out of this without litigating?
Yeah.
Tell your boss you want to be a contractor if you can. that's like my most practical thing I can tell you other than look for another job.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is where we are right now. There are some states where religious exemptions are more likely to work than in others, or medical exemptions, but now we're dealing with a federal mandate, so it becomes even worse. Does the provision that speaks about federal employees, does this mean that the mandate also applies to you?
It does not. And by the way, I listened very closely. Biden said executive branch employees.
Okay.
In his actual words. So it won't apply to the legislative branch.
Because by how the way, could it? How would that, what would that do? Unelect you? What would they do with you if you refuse to go along? They can't do that.
Well, certainly the executive branch can't. By the way, I've got a lawsuit against Nancy Pelosi. I'm not a litigious person. I've never sued anybody in my life. You know, we'll settle this on Twitter or with fisticuffs or something. I'm just not a litigious person. Most likely, I just won't associate with you. You know, screw me once, shame on you. Screw me twice, shame on me. Like, that's sort of the code I live by. All right, you can get one over on me, and then we just don't associate. But I did bring a lawsuit against Nancy Pelosi and the sergeant at arms and the House administrator. I'm not sure who the courts will find that is the person who did this to me. But my paycheck was in Congress was deducted by $500 because I refused to wear a mask on the floor of the House. So can they do it to you? I don't think so. Have they done it to me? They have. And the reason by the way, it wasn't a mistake. I didn't go in there and like forget to wear my mask. The day that Nancy Pelosi said, we will all wear masks until 435 members are vaccinated was the day I said, this BS is going to stop. We have to stand up because this is the pretext for everybody else. So I organized. I don't want to say I led. I'm not really a leader of Congress people, but I organized. I said, let's all show up at the same time in the same place in front of the full view of C-SPAN cameras. And 10 of us showed up on the floor of the House without masks. And we got fined. And there's, by the way, the facts of the case are probably not in dispute. We're not disputing that we refused to wear a mask. The House is not disputing that they reduced our salary. It's in a letter to me. My salary's been reduced, I believe, in violation of the 27th Amendment and the base text of the Constitution. The Constitution says the salaries of the members of Congress will be set by law, which means passed by the House and the Senate and signed by the President. Well, my salary was just set by Pelosi in an act of the House. So if you're saying, well, there's also another part of the Constitution, 27th Amendment, the last amendment to be ratified. It was conceived during the Bill of Rights, but it wasn't ratified until 1990-something. It says the salary of congressmen, the law that changes it can't happen without an intervening election. The salary can't vary. Now, a lot of people think that was so it can't be raised or we can't give ourselves a raise without standing for that at the ballot box at least once. It actually says vary, not increase. And I think the people who conceived that amendment knew that you could have political power. Why am I going into all this detail? Because you asked, can it be done? It has been done to me, and I'm litigating it in federal court with four other congressmen, and we will take it to the Supreme Court. I know a lot of people don't have sympathy for congressmen losing $500 from a $174,000 salary, but it's an issue.
Oh, it's the principle of thing I would fight to the nail, just like you.
Yeah.
So, all right, I probably shouldn't put it quite this way, but I've really lost patience. At this point, I feel like I've shown enough charts, made enough arguments that people who still think lockdowns and masks and 6 feet distance did any good, they're just not looking at the charts. You know, you could compare states that did this, states that didn't. You can't tell the difference. My favorite one is after Iowa lifted all state restrictions in early February, a couple months later, I had a chart of the numbers, the deaths in all the Midwestern states. And I said, all right, I haven't labeled the states. All you geniuses, pick out which one's Iowa. I'm sure it must stick out like a sore thumb, right? And of course, all the lines are identical. So I don't put a lot of trust in people who come at me and are still giving me the same old, same old. So what I find happens to be the case, at least when it comes to COVID, is there's a kind of a bell curve when it comes to people's opinions. So you have people who, let's say, aren't super educated, But yet they have an instinct for nonsense. Yeah. And they say, you know, this particular mitigation measure is nonsense. Then you get like the 100, 110 IQ people who aren't stupid. You know, they're kind of, they probably, you know, got B pluses in school and they've memorized the official government responses to all the arguments. And they say, well, in fact, this mitigation measure. And then when you get down to like the really smart people, you go right back to this mitigation measure is nonsense. That's kind of how I feel about it. So what I want to know is, given that I think you're kind of on board with that, if you're not going to mandate vaccines, and if you think some of the federal government's proposed and state-level government's proposed mitigation measures don't really do much, then what would you do? What would a President Thomas Massey, assuming he was, what would a dictator Thomas Massey do?
Oh, man. I think about that every day, you know, if I were dictator. But anyways, what would I do? By the way, Biden is a dictator. He's a dictator. A lot of these governors are dictators. I was in Florida at an event where Ron DeSantis was, and he said, when I ran for governor, if you told me, first of all, he's like, I never anticipated doing something like this, you know, dealing with this. He said, but if you told me I had this kind of power as a governor, I'd said, you're crazy, you know, something like that. I'm paraphrasing. He doesn't believe governors should have that much power. So Tom, let's assume that aliens descended on the planet and they gave us this virus, that it didn't come from taxpayer dollars in the United States funding virus research in China. Let's say the aliens were trying to take out the human race and they cooked up this virus and they dumped it on us. In the movie, the instant we discovered that it was not fatal and in a large degree to people under the age of 30, we would immediately exploit that weakness of the virus, wouldn't we? Like, we would be like, oh my gosh, the aliens screwed up. Everybody under the age of 30 can go on with a normal life. And in fact, if they do, and they're exposed to the first strain of this virus, they will have natural immunity. So what would a President Thomas Massey or even a school board member Thomas Massey do? He would go on with school. He would say, aliens or the Wuhans or the Faucis made a tragic mistake in their virus, and it doesn't affect people under the age of 30 more than the flu does. And so let's go on with life as if this were the flu for people under the age of 30. Now, people in nursing homes are at huge risk. Okay, a vaccine that's efficacious and doesn't spread the virus, doesn't allow somebody who receives the virus to spread it, is years off. By the way, it still is, okay? Even the CDC has acknowledged you can spread it if you had the virus. But we do know this, that if you've already had COVID, you have immunity that is fantastic. I'm not going to say it's perfect, but it's fantastic. So let's pay those people. We could pay them three times what their normal salary would be. It wouldn't be in the billions. It wouldn't be in the trillions. It would be in the millions. Let's pay them. And then instead of paying everybody a minimum income or pay everybody not to work, if you get COVID, and you know, I'm not even sure this is constitutional, but you said a dictator, Thomas Massey, could do this. All right, let's pass a law that says, if you've got COVID, you know what? You get a month off. We're sorry for you. This is an attack, just like a foreign adversary had attacked our country. And one of the mitigation efforts is, if you have a verifiable case of COVID, stay home for a month and we will pay you. You get COVID pay just to isolate from society. Let's isolate the sick people. Now we have home tests. And I think these are great. These are miraculous. I'm actually shocked the government allows them to be legal. I'm shocked that the government will allow you to know whether you had COVID or not on your own. But it's an oversight of a totalitarian government to allow us to have these home tests. We should have had these home tests 18 months ago instead of, you know, everybody go to the same location and take this PCR test, which may or may not be accurate. I would have had, you know, like the effort to come up with the atomic bomb during World War II. What was that called, Tom?
The Manhattan Project?
Yeah, I would have had, I said this back at the time, the Manhattan Project to test for this virus and for treatments. The one thing that I heard yesterday in Joe Biden's speech, now this is ironic. He specifically went after Governor Ron DeSantis. He said, he's going to go around the governors, and that the governors were, you know, being, I forget what he, what things he ascribed to Governor Ron DeSantis. But then 5 minutes goes by in his speech, and then Joe Biden says, and we're going to focus on monoclonal antibodies because they've been proven 70% effective, blah, blah, blah. Wow. So now Joe Biden is following Ron DeSantis and says we should actually treat people who are ill with this virus. Why have we not done any effort? Why does the CDC not have on their website some advice? If you get COVID and the doctor turns you away, here's what to do at home with COVID. Why do they not have that there? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, even Dr. Fauci, I saw like a 5 minute presentation of his online with slides in which he went through and explained what monoclonal antibodies are and said that it is a really effective treatment that is being underutilized, and he wants physicians to be aware of it and to use it when possible. All of a sudden now, now everybody wants to talk about it. And that is the one good thing. I hate to say anything good about this ridiculous well, Biden thing.
Let me tell you something else I would do that the CDC has quit doing, as far as I can tell. It's called seroprevalence. I would be tracking the amount of natural immunity in the population by geography. And as far as I can tell, they quit doing this in February of this year. Right about the time the vaccine came out, they quit monitoring blood donations, or they quit publishing. I'm sure somebody's still monitoring this stuff, but they quit publishing the seroprevalence of natural antibodies in the voluntary blood donations to the Red Cross. Now, they were tracking that, and they quit tracking it. Why? I would be tracking that. I would want to know by region how vulnerable are the populations, how much natural immunity has been built up in the various populations. So there are so many things we could do, Tom, that would be measured in the billions, not the trillions. This is really going to disappoint your listeners. I don't know why I'm volunteering this information, but I'm going to tell you, I've got a guilty conscience. Before there was $5 trillion spent, I call it not the attack on the virus, but the attack on our republic, the $5 trillion that was spent. The first bill that came to the floor only had, it was at $8 billion with a B, $8 billion. It only had two no votes. And I was not one of the no votes. I rationalized in my head that we could legitimately spend $8 billion with a B in response to this virus. This is back when, you know, we weren't sure, was this Ebola? Yeah. What was the mortality rate? We didn't have really anything to go by. And I voted for $8 billion to be spent to attack the virus, not to attack our republic. I haven't voted for anything since then, but I'm a little bit guilty, so I had to disclose that.
Well, fair enough. People very often bare their souls in the Tom Woods Show confessional.
You're so pure. I'm having a hard time. I wish we didn't have video where I could look at your face. You've just guilted me into that admission.
No. Perfectly. Well, whatever that may have amounted to, you have more than made up for that in the heroism of your Twitter feed alone, by the way. If you're not following Thomas Massey on Twitter, I don't know what to tell you. I want to ask you, let's be frank here. At this point, you've made all the enemies and all the friends you're likely to make in the GOP. So how would you assess the GOP response overall? Let's leave Trump out of it. Let's talk about governors and stuff.
Yeah.
Because really, it's at the state level where these policies are implemented. How do you evaluate this, and do you have any allies in Congress?
Well, let me tell you who the two no votes were on the first $8 billion, and they've been fairly consistent in being no since then: Andy Biggs and Ken Buck. So without being arbitrary or subjective, let me tell you, Andy Biggs and Ken Buck have been pretty good on this. It's a very short list after that. I can't go much further. There have been some allies, but let me tell you, on March 27th of 2020, Tom, we didn't go down the slippery slope. We went over the waterfall. Everybody was terrified. I got an email and phone calls from the leadership that said, stay at home. The virus is dangerous. And Nancy Pelosi, we're going to let Nancy Pelosi and, you know, maybe Steny Hoyer will drive in from Maryland because we need somebody to make the motion on the floor. But we only need two people to pass the first $2 trillion bill. and everybody else should just stay at home. Shelter in place. By the way, meanwhile, they're going to Kroger's, which is a regional grocery store, and they're asking the grocery store workers to bring the groceries out to their car, okay? They're ordering their stuff online from Amazon. Do they think these warehouses are staffed with all robots? No. They are buying food that's raised by farmers. They are expecting to go to the hospital or the doctor's office and somebody be there. Yet Congress is saying this is an emergency and everybody stay home. Well, when the hell are you going to go to work? They were going to pass a $2 trillion bill with nobody in the chamber. And the Constitution does say that each house may make its own rules of proceedings, but it doesn't say that each house may violate the Constitution. And the Constitution says you have to have quorum. So I went to DC. I drove my car. By the way, they were talking about an interim government. They were rolling this out in Newsweek and on Fox. They were introducing you to the person. They had his name, who was going to be the interim dictator. It wasn't going to be Trump. It wasn't going to be Congress. They make an assertion. There's a group. This is not a conspiracy theory. There's a contingency. If the government fails to function, where they install another government to run things. And believe you me, there are lots of people deep in the government who would be happy, who would have been happy to take over for Trump and even all of Congress, even though Pelosi was in charge. So I drove to Congress. I drove by signs on the interstate that said, get off the interstate unless you have real business and, you know, unless you're delivering groceries, get off the interstate. I almost ran out of gas because I stopped at three gas stations that were just closed. I finally found one that would take a credit card at the pump. It was like surreal. If you remember back to March 27th, we were on the 11th of 15 days to slow the spread. And I drove to Congress and I said, by God, you all are going to show up because the Constitution requires it. You're not going to pass $2 trillion by staying at home. Okay, that day, I got an angry phone call from Trump. By the way, I let him go to voicemail three times because I was busy trying to stop this thing or at least get a vote. So he was even angrier by the time
I love you. Let Trump go to voicemail three times.
I was on the floor of the House, by the way, watching the microphone, getting ready to make the motion to demand a quorum. And I start getting these phone calls that end in all zero. Like nobody has a phone number 0000, right? Well, the White House switchboard does. I know what I kind of suspected what that was. But if I took my eye off that microphone and pick your favorite congressman, I don't care who it is, they were not going to walk up to that microphone if I so much as went to the bathroom or took a call from the president. So I couldn't take his calls. But anyways, he was mad at me. He called me a third-rate grandstander. The media wanted to know what defense I had to that. And I said, I'm at least second-rate.
I remember that. That was great. I mean,
what do you do? Are you going to punch back at the president who's got gazillion Twitter followers and he just called you a third-rate grandstander? By the way, my wife pointed out that's a double pejorative. So it's probably not an insult. Like, who wants to be a first-rate grandstander? Like, third-rate grandstander might be a compliment. Anyways, he didn't say third-rate statesman. Anyways, so I had Trump say, throw me out of the party. I had Liz Cheney max donate to my primary opponent and some other members of Congress. Nancy Pelosi on national TV called me a dangerous nuisance. By the way, I talked to her on the floor of the House. Explained my conditions, terms and conditions, and she did not agree to them. But I don't want people to think I wasn't trying to be reasonable. She called me a dangerous nuisance, and John Kerry called me something that I'm not going to say on your podcast because I don't want you to get delisted from the FCC. And then CNN reported that I was the most hated man in Washington, D.C. that day. And I tell people that was the first and only time I know that CNN got the news correct. Like people, literally everybody hated me in Washington, D.C. that day. But let me tell you, that is the day I feel like we didn't go down the slippery slope. We went over the waterfall. Because here's what happened. You set the premise that we're going to have mail-in elections in November. Like, I don't know if Dominion voting machines are rigged. I don't know if people changed votes. I don't know. I don't have the forensics If I were the attorney general, I could subpoena that stuff. If I were the chairman of the oversight committee, I could subpoena it. I can't. But I do know that if you don't show up to vote, that's dangerous. Even in third world countries, they put ink on your finger when you vote, so that they know one warm body got one vote and that person showed up to vote and they counted their vote. So, but that cake was baked on March 27th when Republicans argued it was too dangerous to show up and vote. How do you tell 300 million, well, I don't know how many are allowed to vote, maybe 120 million vote in a presidential election, less than 200 million. But how do you tell all those people that you have to vote in person, but Congress is not going to vote in person? So everybody that's still mad at me in the Republican Party who thinks that the election was rigged needs to get over it if they were mad at me on March 27th. Because that was the day the cake was baked for mail-in elections. And also, that was the day we basically forced the governor's hands. We said, if you want all these goodies, and by the way, we're taking money from your citizens, and if you want to get it back with the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, and all this other stuff, then you have to agree that this is cataclysmic and you're going to suspend all this normal operation and shut down your citizens and deprive them of an income and blah, 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 so you can get these goodie bags. By the way, this is, I know your listeners are students of the Constitution, and I did bring up the Fifth Amendment, which is, you know, if something is taken from you, you have to be compensated. There were members of the Republican Party who I respect, who were telling me I'm going to vote for this, or actually nobody voted for it. Ultimately, that day I made them show up to work, but I couldn't make them work. But they said there's a Fifth Amendment argument here that we're taking livelihoods and we're taking incomes from people. So maybe we should vote for these trillions of dollars to compensate them. The problem is it wasn't the federal government. Remember, Trump, except for the CDC eviction moratorium, all of this stuff was promulgated by governors with the imprimatur of the federal government. The CDC and the other authorities gave them the imprimatur, but never really carried this out. And so if you had the governors, I always thought, well, eventually the governors will come to their senses when they deprive their own state governments of tax money. Mm. Like, that's the feedback loop that's going to work here. They can shut down all their restaurants and they can deprive everybody of an income, but they can't print money. So they will come to their senses when they can't pay the state workers, who will revolt. By the way, they're mostly, I mean, I hate to be a collectivist here, but statistically, a lot of them are registered Democrat. When the governors quit paying the Democrats who work for them, then because they don't have the money, they'll come to their senses. Well, that was the moral hazard that we caused on March 27, 2020, when we gave all that money away. The problem wasn't so much with the money. I mean, that's a problem, but just the way we set up the incentives was all wrong. It wasn't the federal government that was doing the taking. It was the state governments, and the federal government was going to compensate some. So that was the moral hazard.
Well, that was one of the reasons I thought it was so dangerous for Joe Biden to get elected, because I thought if he bails out these blue states, it's catastrophic. You cannot, they have to pay the consequences for what they did to their people. We can't allow them to be bailed out. Let me wrap up with this. First of all, I want to thank you for coming on such short notice. And you're not in your regular studio, you're on the road. And so you're doing a kind of an impromptu thing here. And I'm really grateful for that. But let me put it this way. All those people who, because Trump told them not to like you, didn't like you that day and for days afterward, I mean, those people should be ashamed of themselves, because a lot of those people are the very people today who are trying to get masks off their kids in school correctly and who are standing up against the nonsense. And who has been the guy who has been hardcore on all these sorts of issues and who's the guy who today is most likely to stand with them? It's you. They all owe you an apology. Very few of them are going to be forthcoming, because one of Woods' laws is that nobody ever apologizes. I mean, yes, I know occasionally somebody apologizes, but in general, nobody ever apologizes. I think right now, the two leaders in public life, and by that I mean in elected office at the national level, the two leaders of the resistance, whether you like it or not, MIT graduate Thomas Massey, who expected to have a quiet life, it's you and Rand Paul. You two are the resistance. So as we wrap up here, talk to the Americans who want to resist and who don't know what's happened to America and who are looking desperately anywhere for help as the number of cowards multiply around them by the second. Do you have any words of comfort or wisdom for them?
Yeah. To the degree it's possible, resist, do not comply. I understand people have to make their mortgage payments, et cetera. But, you know, this is what I am trying to do. I do not fly on an airplane now. The reason I'm kind of tired is as I drove here to Georgia last night in a car. I will not wear a mask again. Now, I've figured out a way to resist. I sneak in and vote in the House chamber now. Like, I got fined $500. My wife says, that's fine. That's okay. But the next fine is $2,500. And that's significant. So now I resist by evasion, not blatant resistance. Other than the court, you know, I'm suing in the court. If you can find another job, if your employer is doing something, go find the other job. I know a lot of people can't. To the degree that you can, just resist. Don't be violent. I'm not advocating violence. And here's what I say. If the edicts and the mandates are unscientific, illogical, unconstitutional, and illegal, then resisting them is scientific. It's logical. It's legal. It's constitutional. It's moral. It's a moral imperative to resist them. So if they're doing something to you that's wrong, then resisting it is right. And on Twitter, I ask these as questions so I don't get banned. Like I'll say, if a vaccination mandate is immoral, is it moral to fake your vaccine card? Like, I am not advocating, I'm asking the question.
Right.
Like, do whatever you can to the greatest degree possible. This is the fight of our lives. I know you tweeted the other day. I follow you on Twitter. I'm not going to say who you retweeted or you quote tweeted, but you said, if you're still worried about Afghanistan, if that's consuming all your thoughts and you're not concentrated, I'm paraphrasing you,
yeah,
and you're not focused on the demise of our republic here at home, then you're being misled. Like you're
hopeless.
You're hopeless.
Yeah.
So don't, like, this is the fight. This is the fight, folks. Whether you can do it at your school board, run for school board. If you've got one decent person on the school board, encourage them to force a vote on masks, whether they win or lose. And then that way, you can know everybody at the school board who needs replaced.
Yeah, excellent.
In our state legislature, in Kentucky, the governor, who is a Democrat, called a special session of a supermajority of Republicans in our legislature. There was one woman who stood up, Savannah Maddox, follow her on Twitter, who forced them to vote. By the way, the hospitals wanted more money to hire people. Oh, I wonder why people are leaving the hospitals. Maybe because of the vaccine mandates. They wanted more money to hire people. And she said, well, let's don't give money to the people who are forcing their people out through vaccine mandates. So she got a vote on a vaccine mandate. Now we know who are our friends and who are our enemies. So anyways, I know you want to wrap this up, but this is my advice. Find out right now, take down, figure out who is for you and who is against you. And by the way, passive, not doing anything, that's against you. If they don't vote, they are against you. All that is necessary for evil to prevail is for good people to do nothing. I'm not going to be charitable and say they are good people if they are doing nothing. Find the people who are fighting, put those on a list, find the people who are doing nothing and put them on the same list as the people who are working against you. Force the votes from everything to school board up to the federal level. And then at the next election, do what you can to get the bastards unelected. And in the meantime, civil disobedience, nonviolent civil disobedience is your best course of action until the next election.
Well, I love everything you said, and I would add that maybe now's the time for small businesses with maybe 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 employees who need extra help to start posting on the job boards for all those folks who are going to be leaving their current employment. And all you got to say in the job description at the end is, we value your medical privacy, and everybody will know what that means. Now is the time.
And if that doesn't work for you, ask for a 1099. Tell them, I'm Tom Woods Incorporated, party of one, and we set the policies at our S Corp or LLC or whatever corporation or thing you form, and become a party of one. Biden is trying to use intermediaries to get to you. Evade as much as you can if you can't afford like direct resistance.
How do people follow you? What's your Twitter handle?
Yeah. Well, Sassy with Massey. Just look for that. My mom always said, if you can't say something nice, say something vague. Well, I've modified that to be a little bit sassy. Try to be humorous. It's Sassy, S-A-S-S-Y, with Massey, M-A-S-S-I-E. It's becoming harder to be sassy when people are just being so violent. They are violent. They are violent. When they want to put a needle in you, that's violence. Rep Thomas Massey, R-E-P, Thomas Massey, M-A-S-S-I-E, on Twitter and Facebook. I am in the dumpster fire every day, adding aerosol cans, paper plates, anything I can into the dumpster fire. And I'm ticking off the blue check marks, and I'm calling them out every day. So I apologize. At the same time, I apologize for being in the dumpster fire and playing with matches. But please follow me there. That's where I'm getting the word out, because the mainstream media won't have me.
Well, we'll put that in the notes so people can indeed follow you. And thank you very much, Thomas Massey. Let me say to the folks listening, I hope you'll join me October 16th in Orlando for the 2000th episode event of The Tom Woods Show. It's going to be a room filled with normal people who never bought into the Fauci nonsense, who just want to have some fellowship, and I'm going to give you a couple hours of great entertainment. It costs you nothing. So check that out at TomWoods2000.com. Subscribe to The Tom Woods Show at TomWoods.com/Apple. Thomas Massey, you're a hero. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, Tom. Is this episode 1969?
As a matter of fact, it is.
Well, I had a 69 Mustang Mach 1, but I wasn't born until 1971. So we just missed that consequential episode by 2 years.
Well, how about that? Well, the thing is, I have several episodes in the can ready to go. And, you know, you would have been an episode in the early 1970s. But this is so urgent, I just threw those all in the trash can. Good. Or at least the recycle bin temporarily.
Right.
Because we had to talk about this. So thanks again for doing it. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate you.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.